Well, here's your friend, Mrs. Clutes is here.
Hi, Ellie.
Oh, sure, I know you.
See, you're tall there.
Can you hold that seat for us, please?
Hold the seat for you, okay.
No, because women sit on that side.
Oh, I see.
Do you want to sit closer?
No, I want her to sit there.
Oh. Okay, I can certainly hold it for her.
Okay. I haven't been home for about 10 years.
Okay, a month, no.
No. I'm sorry, I hugged you.
Okay. Good evening. Practicing different kinds of openings. It's cold. It's cold today.
Yeah. Need the heat on?
Everybody threatened that there wouldn't be a winter this year. I guess they were wrong. Tov. The parsha is Chayei Sarah. Dr. Green,
sir.
Are you with me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great.
There's a request on my left that you should speak up.
That what?
There's a request on my left that you should speak up.
I should speak up. I'll tell you what. You stop my cough, and I will speak up.
My famous cough.
I do my best.
It's getting so that I feel that it's part of me. And I don't feel annoyed at all about it. Okay, Parshas Chayei Sarah. The first pasuk in the parasha says, "Vayu Chayei Sarah." Sarah lived ve'ashana ve'esrim shana ve'sheva shanim. Shnei Chayei Sarah. She lived to be 127 years old. The second pasuk is, Vatamot Sarah beKriyat Arba hi Hebron. We all know that. There's Kriyat Arba hi Hebron. I don't know how that started. We know how it is today. Hi Hebron beEretz Kinaan vayavo Avraham lispod leSarah velipkota. He came to do these two things, lispod, a hesped, a eulogy, velivkota, and to cry over her body, or the fact that she was dead. Okay, Rashi. Rashi says, Vayu chayei Sarah be'ashana ve'esrim shana ve'sheva shanim, Lekach nechtav Sarah bechol klal uklal. It was Rashi is relating to the sentence structure, not to its meaning, but just to the way that it is laid out for us. And it says in the pasuk beyashana, besrim shana, besheva shanim. So there's a kind of extreme use of the word shana. Lomar lecha, back to Rashi, shekol echad nidrash la'atzmo. So Rashi says that each of these numbers, I mean, you could say 127, that's all the numbers together, but it could be that the numbers are meaningful, each and every one of them. Right? We also, I mean, that's reasonable, isn't it, so far?
Mm-hmm.
Bat me'ah, kivat esrim lechet. When she was 100, she was like bat esrim lechet. Like until you're 20 years old, you're not given a punishment of karet, of being cut off from the people. So she was kibat esrim, which might mean she wasn't culpable. She wasn't going to be punished for anything. Something about her righteousness. She was righteous. Bat me Yaakov at esrim lechet. Ma bat esrim lo chata'ah. Share ein abat onashim. Like we could say, we could argue that somebody who is less than 20 years old, this is what Rashi says, bat esrim lo chata'ah. That when you say bat esrim, you mean that there's no culpable sin. Jare eina bat onshim. Af bat mea belo chet. So even when she was 100, she also wouldn't be given a punishment of that kind because she was not guilty of anything. So it's like a big compliment. Then finally Rashi says, bat esrim kivat sheva li yofi. When she was 20, she was like a 7-year-old, li yofi. Okay, I'm not sure exactly what kind of yofi Rashi is talking about, but let's give it to Rashi. Rashi says, bat sheva li yofi, little children are more beautiful than their adult counterparts. Okay. The last part of Rashi, Shnei Chaye Sarah. Kulan Shavim Litova. All the years of Sarah were good. They were good years. She did good things. I mean, we know that Sarah had a less than a clear position. On the one hand, she was a prophetess. She directed Abraham in certain cases. But her attitude to Yishmael seems to us to have been a little bit harsh, you might say. I mean, after all, Esav, who is, we will see, was a lot more problematic a personality than Yishmael, was not treated like Yishmael. Like his mother, Rivka, did not deny him access, really, to the father, even though she had to do something that was very strange. She had to do something. So Rashi explains this strange usage, right? Me'ashana, Shimshana, Sheveshanim, for the purpose of a drash. Right, Rashi is of the opinion that extra words or uncomfortable kinds of sentence structure leads us to, always leads us to something more than you think. More than you think. So that the hesped that Avraham Avinu may have given for Sarah is in the first pasuk, according to Rashi. And just to say, Me'ah Shadav Yisrim Shadav Yisheva Shadav, instead of saying Me'ah Yisrim Yisheva, that's the hesped. That's the hesped. She was the most wondrous person. She was like 100. She was like 20. She was like 7. What could I say more about Sarah than those words? So Rashi sticks to his position, which is that the odd-centered structure has to be revealed, has to reveal something, has to tell us something. That's what he says. So in this context, it's important to look at the Ramban. Suppose to the Ramban, here on the sheet. Me'yat shana v'esrim shana le'eshon Rashi. Lekach nechtav shana bechol klal uklal. The reason the word shana is repeated again and again. Lomar lecha shekol echad nidrash la'atzmo. In order that we should know that each of these numbers, so each of these years, has a special meaning. Nidrash la'atzmo. Bat meya kebat esrim lechet, bat esrim kebat shevel yofi. V'chein katuv b'shnei chaye Avraham. Right? It also says that when giving the number of Abraham's life, ve'ein midrasho zeh nachon, the Ramban says. This Rashi is simply not correct. It's misleading. It's unnecessary. Why? Sharei b'shnei chaye Yishmael, right, when the Torah summarizes the life of Yishmael, ne'emar kishnei chaye Abraham b'shaveh, that he's sort of like the same as Abraham. V'lo hayu shavim b'tovah. How could you say that Yishmael equals Abraham? And Abraham was certainly a person of great significance, which Yishmael was not. V'lo hayu shavim b'tovah. And they were not equal in goodness. They were not equal in the goodness that they did. Aval haya mitchila rasha v'asa tshuva basov. Okay, Rabban says, I have to agree with Chazal, who said that Yishmael started out as a bad guy, but he did tshuva. He did tshuva, right? Yishmael came with his brother to bury his father, and we know that from Chazal that he did tshuva, that he Yishmael did tshuva. But furthermore, ki shana shana lechalek mashma. And we know that Chazal say that the reason the word Shana appears is to distinguish 127, but it certainly doesn't come to tell you that Abraham and Yishmael were equal in some way. Aval Shana Shana b'shanim derech halashon hu. This is like the Ramban says, this is a reasonable sentence structure for biblical Hebrew. That sounds good, doesn't it, if you say it that way? But if you say it regular, they just mean it's regular, according to the Ramban. It's very common to put in the word shana to divide up the hundreds from the tens from the ones, right? Omasha Ruba Breshit Rabbah Bat Me'ak Bat Esrim Lechet Lo Darshu Kein Ela Miyitur HaLashon. The reason the drasha appears, the drasha that the Rashi quoted, the reason that the drasha appeared was Miyitur HaLashon. Just why was these extra words Shechazar Va'amar Shnei Chayei Sarah? It's only because when you look at the pasuk, that the pasuk says, "Vayu yemei chayei Sarah, me'yasha na v'shem shana v'sheva shanim." And then another phrase, "Shnei chayei Sarah." What do you need that phrase for? That's certainly unnecessary. I mean, I already know she was 127 years. I already know that is her age when she died. So why do you have to tell me that this is Shnei Chayei Sarah? So that's what Chazal were concerned about. Not what Rashi says, Shnei Chayei Sarah, that Rashi says that Shana, Shana, Shana is the issue. But it's Shnei Chayei Sarah that is the issue. Shekalalam v'hishva otan v'lo yidrishu kein v'Avraham. Okay, this is only something that happens here. It doesn't say when the years of Abraham are mentioned, they don't make this drasha. So they only make the drasha because it says Shnei Chayei Sarah. The repetition is what makes it. Now, about this pasuk, there is a very interesting medrash. There's a very interesting medrash, and the medrash appears squeezed in here. See Bereshit Rabbah, Parashat Chayei Sarah, Parashat Nunchet, Siman Gimel. There's this amazing medrash, which goes as follows. Rabbi Akiva, Haya Yoshev Doresh. Rabbi Akiva is not even in the category of a regular Tana. Rabbi Akiva is the best of the best, right? Extreme, even though he had a rocky start in his life, he turned out pretty well. So now if you think of Rabbi Akiva is giving a drasha, like somebody put up a sign in Rehavia that Rabbi Akiva will darshan on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock in this shul, was anybody going to miss out on that? Nobody. They're all going to be there. Everybody in the world. But when Rabbi Akiva was speaking in Rehavia, he might have been, Yoshev Doresh, Vatzibur, Minam Neim. He was darshaning, he was teaching. That means he was teaching, right? Torah. And the Tzibur, they're all asleep. They're all asleep. How could that be? How could it be that they're all asleep? I mean, to me, it happens all the time. I don't know. But no one ever asked that question. Everybody understands why they go to sleep. But here's Rabbi Akiva telling people what the Torah wants of them. They came to the drasha because I guess they thought it would be good. But it turned out to be problematic and they all went to sleep. So Rabbi Akiva was not a person who didn't understand realities. And he thought that he should say something that would wake them up. Bikesh la'oreran. He wanted to wake them up. Amar, Mara ata Esther, shetimloch al sheba v'esriba bayabedina. He says, how come it says in Megillat Esther that there were 127 medinot under the control of Ahasuerus? And of course, he married Esther one way or the other, according to one sort of regulation or some other regulations. But she then became the Malkah, the queen over these 127 medinot. Marata Esther Shedevloch al Kesheva Vesriva Medina, Ela Tavo Esther Shaita Bat Bita Shel Sarah. But Esther, as you know, or if you don't know, you know now, was the daughter of the daughter of Sarah. Sarah Imenu Shaita Kufi Kafi Zayin Vitimloch Al Kufikaf Zayin Medinot. So now here's Rabbi Akiva, and he's saying, "Oh, he must have been teaching on Purim. Must have been Purim." And he said to the people who are all sleeping, he said, "Wake up, sleepyheads! I want to tell you something that's really going to give you like a jolt." What was the jolt? That Esther was like Sarah. That Esther was like Sarah. Now, that could mean, I mean, you suspect, you, the people sleeping in my shir, you suspect that Esther was not such a great personality. After all, she did things that regular Jewish women don't do. Right? She had a relationship with Ahasuerosh. We don't know much about Ahasuerosh, but he was not one of the great people of the ancient world. Right? He's not in the category of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. No, not at all. He was a Persian king, and she was his wife, and therefore was the Persian queen. And so Rabbi Akiva said, you think that she's not such a big deal. But I can tell you, Rabbi Akiva said, that there's a remez, there's a hint in the text that indicates that she was a special person. Why? What's the hint? 127 medinot equals 127 years of Sarah, which means that she was the daughter, the granddaughter, the great-granddaughter of Sarah in more ways than one. It wasn't just that she was younger and she was older. It wasn't just but the number, like her essence, the essence of Esther, the essence of Esther was that she was able to defend her people. Right? She was able because she was the queen. And she had a certain power. And she used that power in a proper way. And so Rabbi Akiva said, so you see she's a righteous person, a righteous woman, and you have to give her honor. Now why Rabbi Akiva thought that this medrash would be darash, this medrash would be something that would wake everybody up, I'm not sure about that. I used to think it must be a better way to say that. In the olden days, I thought that this was a kind of a milta de bidichuta. You know, the Gemara says that when you teach, it's good to start off with a joke. You ever hear that? Was not Johnny Carson. That's in the Gemara. Right? You should start off with a joke. Now, why should you start off with a joke? Because people take to jokes more than they take to Torah. Even to Torah. So if you start off with a joke, you got them. You know, they're always going to be sitting there wide awake, waiting for the next joke, which either will come or it won't come. But, you know, that's sort of like the way it's done, the way it should be done. And in Aramaic, that's called milta debedichuta. You should say a funny word. Word as in Yiddish, like you say a vort. Not a single word, but like a bunch of words. Milta. So I thought, in the olden times, I thought that that's what the Rabbi Akiva was doing. He was saying something that people would laugh at, which would wake them up. But then I found it difficult. I used to go to the yeshiva. We used to go every year to Tzfat. And we davened in Braslav. Shachris. In the morning, at night also, but in the morning we davened in Brussels because I liked it. So I always went there. So in the morning they had a very nice kiddush, and the whole yeshiva was invited always. And they asked me to give a vort, to speak at the kiddush. And it was always the same. It was always the same, the talk I gave. Not that the talk was not the same, but the what happened was always the same. I would quote a pasuk from the parsha. I would quote a pasuk from the parsha, and then I would tell them what Rashi said. By that time, they were all asleep. Everybody in the room was asleep, and then I would say, and there's a problem with this Rashi. So if you could be more than just asleep, now they were more than just asleep. Then I would say, and Rabbi Nachman solved the problem in this way. Everybody's awake. Everybody's awake. You know, they all wanted to know. They wanted to know. So that's what I thought. I thought Rabbi Akiva was going to tell them something that they really wanted to know. And that would be a way of waking them up. And what they really wanted to know was what was special about Esther. What was special about Esther? So she was special because she was like Sarah Imenu. There's something about Esther which is the same as Sarah Imenu. So let's look at the next source. The next source is a Mishnah in Avot, Perek Gimel Mishdalet. Akiva ben Mahalalel Omer. Just keep focus on these three things that I'm going to tell you, and you won't do any aveirot, any transgressions. Dameyem bata. You should know. Remember always where you came from. La'anata olech, where you're going to. But if neimi atatid v'teidir v'cheshbon, and then the Mishnah explains itself. Explains Akavya ben Mahalalel. And the explanation is this, Ma'ayin bata mitipas rucha, like where does everybody come from? Just a drop with a bad smell. La'ana ta'olech, think where you're going. L'makom afar imah v'tola'a, you're going to be buried in the ground and you'll disintegrate and you'll be with the worms and the... Well, if they then certainly you should consider who you're going to be judged by in the future. So you have a kind of not that exciting, such an exciting start, and you have a less exciting end, and in between you're going to be judged. I mean, it really sounds like this is a tough, there's no time here for fun. But in any event, if you look at the Rabbeinu Yonah, you see the third wide line. L'sof mi'ata atid li'tein din b'cheshbon. You see that line? L'fnei mi'ata atid li'tein din b'cheshbon. Sh'anivra'im lo nivra'u ach li'ra'at Hashem. That those who are created, that's us, were created only to fear God. Ki ech yecheta ha'adam im yachshov lefnei mi atid l'tein din v'cheshbon. He says, how could a person ever commit a sin if he had in mind the fact that he's going to be judged by a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Because the idea of being judged by a Kodesh Baruch Hu is that nothing is hidden. You can't fake it. You can't have nothing to say. Right, to say God knows everything about you and what you've done. V'yivater al hapur anut v'nisayon sh'ayalo al cheta'av ki yitbayesh boshet gadol. And he will relinquish the bad things and the tests that he will go through in life because of his sins. Ki yitbayesh boshet gadol. Busha, that's the word that Rabbeinu Yonah thinks explains what this Mishnah is talking about. It's talking about busha. Boshet gadol. Mashal lemelech shenichnas adam lefanav. This is similar to a king, talking about a king. A person comes to visit him. Im yimsa'eyu mirameh b'ma'asav. O mishaker dvav. If he is mirameh, he is what does that mean?
Deceitful.
What?
Tricking.
Cheating.
Deceitful.
Oh, deceitful. Good. You have to go back to the English to get a word in English.
It could mean.
If it's mirameh b'ma'asav or mishaker devarav, alo yitbayesh b'boshet gadol. Al achat kama v'kama lefnei melech malchei ha'mlachim ha'kadosh baruch hu gam nitbayesh ha'nefesh. Nitbayesh ha'nefesh. The soul itself will be embarrassed et she'nitparda min ha'guf ha'boshet achaz nitparda min ha'guf, even after the neshama, the nefesh, has separated itself from the body. Haboshet ahi gedola mehaboshet ba'odena shama. V'gam ki lo yishkach milibo, it will not be forgotten from his heart. Yadavar yashan noshan v'husra k'tzat habusha. He says, because after a while, even if you did something wrong, you felt embarrassed at being discovered, but eventually you forget about it. Husrak tzat habusha, and the embarrassment disappears a little. Ki teva hashikicha, it's natural that forgetfulness shebaguf mitarev im teva hanefesh, that the shikicha, forgetfulness that applies to the body, mitarevim teva hanefesh, it gets mixed in with the nature of the nefesh, of the soul. V'chi eino yachol, ki eino yachol lehitgaber alav lishkoch hadavar legamrei. And you can't, it's never forgotten entirely. And then if you're reminded of it, then you understand that you remember it very clearly. Al kol panim mitgaber alav lehit yashen hadavar. He says, nevertheless, yitgaber alav lehit yashen hadavar. It becomes old and unused. Shehu kitzat hashikicha. That's a little bit of forgetfulness. Shemasir rov habusha. That gets rid of most of the embarrassment. Ach biyot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'olam la'ol me'ad ta'amod be'busha, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forever, remembers everything, and that busha always exists, b'ota sha'ah, sh'ayta omedet lefanav, u'chemo ha'pam ahu ta'amod mevuyeshet la'olam. V'zeh sh'amru razal oyla. This is what Chazal said when they said Oyla lota busha. It's terrible to have this kind of busha. Oyla lota klima, kliman busha, the same thing. Lachen al kol panim hamale al libo dvarim eile lo yavo lidei avira. So what Rabbeinu Yonah is distinguishing between my natural self, my life, and Olam Haba. He says, in your natural life, you can't really blot things out. You could sort of forget them. You could sort of, like, you know, not be involved with them. You can make believe that it never happened, but you actually remember it. That if you get somebody encourages you to remember, or something encourages you, you'll remember. But this is not. This is true. This is true because you are in some way always standing before God, and standing before God is like remembering. It's like remembering everything that ever happened. Okay, that's the Rabbeinu Yonah. Now there are two more psukim that I want to look at. Right, you see the pasuk Breshit Parak Yud Chet pasuk Tet. It says in the pasuk. It says in the pasuk, "Vayomru elav ayei Sarah ishtecha." Where is Sarah? Vayomer hinei ba'oil. Hinei ba'oil, and Chazal say that this proves that Sarah was tznua. Right? It was the angels came, and they wanted to tell Sarah something, and she should have known. She was a prophetess. She would have known that they're coming to tell her something as well, and she should have been there. Just then, instead, she was not there, and the angels had to ask Abraham, where is Sarah? So she was acting out her notion of tzniut. And her notion of tzniut was that she should not be available to men, even if the occasion warranted it. That she should have been available. We'll look at the Rashi in a minute. But the last pasuk that is quoted on the page, Esther Perik Bet Pasuk Tedvav. Uvahagi, I remember Esther, she was in the beauty contest. That's what people say. Bat Abichayil, Dod Mordechai, Esher Lakach Lo Levat, Lavo El HaMelech, Lo Biksha Davar. Lo biksha davar. She didn't ask for anything. She didn't want to be made up. She didn't want to, I guess, you know. Lo biksha davar. Ki emet asher yomar Hegai, Saris HaMelech, Shomer HaNashim. But she only took what Hegai, who was Saris HaMelech, he was an officer of the king, in charge of the women, Shomer HaNashim. Right? Whatever he said, she should use whatever kind of cosmetics, I guess, that she should use, so she used them. But she didn't ask for anything. She didn't ask for anything. Obviously, the other women who were in the contest did ask. So yes, Esther was without this extra advantage, without this idea of extra cosmetics, she was no Seit Chain. She was appreciated by all those who saw her. Now, if you put these two psukim together, right, it would seem with the drasha of Chazal, it would seem that Sarah was tznua and Esther was tznua. So this is generally the explanation. What is the connection? Why is it that Rabbi Akiva was able to connect Sarah to Esther? On what level? I mean, Sarah was Abraham's wife and very important to the Jewish people, but she was a queen. She was not a queen. And Esther was something totally different. But Chazal says there's a pasuk in the Torah which asks, where is Sarah? So Sarah's in the tent. Where is Esther? Where's Esther? She also is very modest in her demands. So according to Rabbi Akiva, Esther was the great-granddaughter of Sarah because she had a quality that made her Sarah-like. And that quality that she had was called tzniut. That's what Chazal said. That it's tzniut that brought them together. Right? Tzniut brought them together.
Hello?
Yes. Now, I wanted to mention that tzniut is probably is probably connected to busha.
I'll call you back.
the busha that Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about. Busha, as you know, was created in the Garden of Eden. Right, in Gan Eden, when the Adam and Chava found themselves in an unreasonable position. It was before they found themselves in the unreasonable position. There was no such thing as busha. Busha didn't exist. They were like animals. I mean, I don't mean that. Mm. But the animals in the wild, they don't have busha usually. I know there's some animals that seem to have busha, but generally speaking, they don't have busha. Adam and Chava had busha, and they had to get dressed. They had to get dressed because they saw that they were somehow out of place in the world. And it could be, without trying to define it technically, like what exactly it means to have to be tzanua, and there's no difference between men and women when it comes to the desire to be integrated in a world that was not tzanua. Right? The world that was not tzanua was a challenge to Adam and Chava, and apparently Esther and Sarah faced the same kind of challenge. And according to Rabbeinu Yonah, what you have to avoid is busha. Because busha contaminates you. You never get rid of it. You never get rid of the busha. It follows you around. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires to make you aware of your sins, right, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. So it produces busha. You feel that you're not in the right place at the right time. That you haven't. In other words, even if this feeling was dormant for a long time, even if you haven't necessarily come out in favor of yourself, right? But the busha, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is there. It's like a festering sore. And eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets it out. So that's why Chazal said, pick that tzniut. That's why Chazal picked that tzniut, because tzniut is the one midah, the one kind of function that we have, which makes us appropriate for the world in which we find ourselves, for the world in which we live. Right? We have to overwhelm. We have to overwhelm this busha. And even though the busha is very, very little and contracted, nevertheless, it can explode and destroy our connections to the real world. So I think that this may be what Rabbi Akiva was talking about. He wanted to tell the people that Esther and Sarah were similar in that they were both trying to find a place for themselves in the world of busha. And that's what Avraham Avinu was saying when he came livkot l'sarah v'livkota, that Avraham Avinu knew there was something to say, that there was something to say about Sarah that you couldn't say about others. She was the first one. She was the first one who represented the victory over busha. Victory over busha, which started in the time of Adam and Chava. I know that it was a victory, because after all, it says in the Torah that Adam and Chava tried to dress themselves. But eventually, they had to let HaKadosh Baruch Hu dress them. You remember? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that indicates that, in case, again, as with many things, that if you try to do something, you'll be supported by heaven. The Gemara says that many times on different topics, that if you try to improve yourself, you try to do tshuva, you try to go the right way, that in heaven you will be supported and accepted. So that the real vision of Sarah and Esther was the vision of these women who were tsnuot. They were able to overwhelm their desire to be part of the real world, so to speak, and be part of a world of their own creation, which is a world of busha, but not the kind of busha that does you in, the kind of busha that keeps you going. And so how you explain the Medrash remains a mystery, right? The Medrash is Rabbi Akiva, they were all dreaming, Bikesh la'oreran, and he told them this. He told them that Sarah and Esther was similar. I guess as a result, after hearing that good news, he figured that everybody would be interested in continuing the shiur. But we're going to stop now. Have a good Shabbos. Okay.
You didn't think of that question.
What? What is it?
You're going to come back to instruction.
Oh, I see. Look, just wait one more minute. There's a minute. I just don't want... The Rashi is important. You see the Rashi? I'm sorry. Thank you. Vayomru elav, ayei Sarah ishtecha. The angel said, where is Sarah, your wife? Vayomer, he named ba'ol. She's in the tent. Now the Rashi says this, Nakud al Aleph Yud Vav Shebe Elav. Right? You see the word Elav on the
yeah.
Pasuk?
Yeah.
Vayomru Elav. The word Elav is spelled Aleph Lamed Yud Vav.
Mm.
Yes, you with me?
Yeah.
Aleph Lamed Yud Vav. Nakud Rashi. Nakud al Aleph Yud Vav Shebe Elav. Now if you look at the Sefer Torah, the kind of Sefer Torah you read from in Shul on Shabbos, you'll see that there's a dot on the letter Aleph, on the letter Yud, and the letter Vav. Three dots. That they're not punctuation dots, they're just dots. Right? They're part of the Sefer Torah itself. V'tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, there's a Braita, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kol Makom Shekatav Rabba al-Hanekuda, Atadoresh Aktav. that he says whatever a word has a dot on it, if there are more letters without a dot than there are letters with a dot in that word, then you darshan the letters that don't have, the letters come first. I'll say it again.
Okay.
You have a word. Like here we have Elah. Mm-hmm. Four letters. It's a four-letter word. Three of the letters have dots on them. And the fourth letter doesn't. So that means to us, that's a hint to us, that we should think carefully about the letters that have a dot on them. The Aleph, the Yud, and the Vav. Aleph, Yud, and Vav have had dots on them. So, v'kan ha-nekuda rabba l'ktav, ata doresh ha-nekuda. So, what's the drasha? So, this is according to Rashi. Rashi says the reason that these dots are there are to remind us that the word has a special meaning. Not a regular meaning, but a special meaning. Eina doresh she'af l'sara she'alu ayo Avraham. There's another meaning to that word. Right? The word Aleph Lamed Yud Vav means Elav, to him. The angels asked him, Avraham, what's going on? But we just said that, you know, there's another possibility, and that is there's an Aleph Yud Vav. That's a Hebrew word. Aleph Yud Vav, which is Ayo. Where is he? Where is he? Not where is she? So the Gemara says, Sha'af l'sara sha'alu ayo Avraham. They also asked Sarah, where is he, Avraham? Lamadnu she'ish'al adam b'achsanya shelo le'ish al ha'isha u'le'isha al ha'ish. Says we learned the great principle here, and a principle has to do with tzniut, that you should ask, you want to ask about a woman, ask her husband. You want to ask about a man, ask his wife. That's what Rashi says. Ki ishala ish. Okay? So in other words, in this pasuk, you have another principle that concerns tzniut, which is hidden in the pasuk. Like the regular explanation is, they said to him, where is your wife? And the hidden meaning is, they said to her, where is your husband? Ah. Right? And that's also a category of tzniut. It has something to do with with tzniut. Okay. You get it?
Yeah.
It was, for Rashi, you have to understand, it was very simple. For Rashi to say that words had multiple meanings, that statements could be reorganized as questions or as answers, this was very reasonable for Rashi, because it made sense to Rashi that the Torah could be interpreted in a variety of ways. That was what Torah meant. It was not just a kind of interpretation or a certain interpretation, but interpretation was something that could be restated again and again, and that's why the Rashbam, as you know, Rashbam, who was Rashi's grandson, right, one of his many grandsons, but he wrote a commentary on the Torah, right, called Rashbam. So he wrote a commentary on the Torah, and in his introduction to the commentary, he wrote that I went to Rashi, my grandfather, to ask him permission to write this commentary because it might be seen as competitive or as impolite or unreasonable for the grandson to write a competitive commentary, sort of against his grandfather. So he went to his grandfather, Rashi, and he asked him, can I do this? But the way he said it was, l'fi apshatim hamitchatshim b'kol yom. what I want to do, he said to his grandfather, I don't want to bother you, what you've done, but there are new understandings that come up all the time of the psukim in the Chumash, and I want to take note of them. I want to write them down. And Rashi said, fine. That's a good thing to do, and that's why we have the Perush of the Rashbam, which is not quite as extensive as Rashi, but which is very much similar in the case that in the instance that new interpretation is de rigueur. I mean, it's like that's what Torah is. Torah lends itself to new interpretations, new interpretations, and you know, like there's this the team that is interpreting, and then there's the pushback team that says, no, you can't do that. But that's how it should be. That's how it should be. There should be the team of new interpretation and the team of pushback against new interpretation. And that's how we can weed out the really good new interpretations from the kind of imagined interpretations of some. So that's what Rashi learns from this word, Elav, which has three dots on it. You darshan the three dots because it only has four letters. And the three dots are Ayo, Aleph Yud Vav. Aleph Yud Vav means where is he? And Rashi says that teaches us at first that the angels asked her, where is he? Meaning Avraham Avinu. And secondly, we learn a general rule that if you want to know about the wife, you ask the husband. You want to know about the husband, you ask the wife. A general rule. Okay.
Thank you. Come on, brother.